Before we begin with the presentation, I'm loud, aren't I? Before we begin, just turn my gain down a little bit, Marcus, if you wouldn't mind. Before we begin with the presentation, I would like for us to read a passage from the book of Philippians. So turn there with me, everyone, if you would. Or tap there if you're looking on a digital device, that's okay. I'd like to read from the book of Philippians, chapter 4. And I'm going to start reading in verse 14. It was kind of you to share in my trouble. And you Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving, except you only. Even in Thessalonica, you sent me help for my needs once and again. Not that I seek a gift, but I seek the fruit that increases to your credit, or the original language is the credit that increases to your account. I have received full payment and more. I am well supplied, having received from Epaphroditus the gifts you sent, a fragrant offering, a sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to God. And my God will supply every need of yours according to the riches of his glory in Christ Jesus. To our God and Father be glory forever and ever. Amen. I read this passage because I want all of us to understand that what you are about to see is the Lord's work in the Philippines. It is not my work. It is not Randy Hilburn's work. It is the work of God. And it is the work of the Lord. I happen to be the agent. I happen to be the person doing these things, along with Brother Randy Hilburn from Bakersfield. But this is God's work. And one thing that our brother, the Apostle Paul, also says there in Philippians chapter 4 is that when we contribute financially to things like this, in the eyes of God, we get credit for that as well. The verse, one of the more important verses in that passage, says that Paul writes to the church in Philippi, and he says, I seek the credit that accrues to your account. And that's the way Paul phrases it. He uses those financial terms. So whenever you contribute to something like this in the eyes of God, you become a partner in the work, and you receive just as much credit as the one doing it. So what I want to share with you tonight is I want to share with you your work as well. Because the congregation did, although it wasn't planned initially, they did end up giving me some. Some of you individually have given to this work as well, and so this is your work as a congregation. And to those who gave individually, this is your work. And these are things that you did along with me while we were there in the Philippines together. I left on Tuesday night, March 1st. I arrived on Thursday morning, March 3rd. The flight was only 17 hours, but as we had yet to go on daylight savings, the Philippines at that time was 16 hours ahead, so I lost about a day, which that happens, and that's normal for that kind of travel. And so we arrived there on Thursday. Didith and Aria and her mother and her younger sister met me there at the airport. We stayed in Manila for one night. And then on Friday morning, we flew to the city in Viga, to a city called Lawag in Ilocos Norte. And from there, we drove south to Vigan. This is the baptistry at the back of the church building in Vigan. You're going to see some more of Vigan and some of the church building there as the evening wears on. This did happen while we were there. These two baptisms, they happened on Wednesday. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But we drove from the airport in Lawag to Vigan. And Saturday was spent with Brother Jeff. This is Brother Jeff, Jeffany Asurin. And this is his father, Brother Rolando. The building is very close to their house. Brother Rolando and Brother Jeff share the work of preaching there in Vigan together. They're partners in that work. And so Saturday was spent with Jeff driving us around town. And in particular, one of the places he wanted to take us was a particular museum. Normally, I wouldn't show you pictures like this, but this has sort of some impact on our trip. This is a picture of what used to be a yard. And if you look and you see bars on windows everywhere, that's because this particular museum used to be a prison. It was the provincial prison in the province of Ilocos Sur. Ilocos, the southern, Ilocos Sur. Vigan is the provincial capital of Ilocos Sur. And this used to be the prison yard. This used to be where the basketball court was. Because if you know the Philippines, you know there are basketball courts everywhere. Filipinos love basketball. You think you like basketball here in the Bay Area because the Warriors just won the NBA championships. No. You like basketball. Filipinos love basketball. Just look at Brother Elmore and Sister Regina. Elmore grew up in the Philippines. Sister Regina grew up here. Her sport is baseball. His sport, basketball. So, this is where the basketball court was. And so here's sort of a view of it from the wall that had all the bars on it. This is the view across. The reason I'm showing you this picture is because, as I said before, it used to be a prison. It was a provincial prison for a long time, up until just a few years ago recently. It is now a museum of the Ilocano Rebellion against the Spanish. But while it was still a prison, Brother Rolando went there to preach. And he held worship services in the prison for the inmates. And he didn't do it because there was a brother in Christ who had landed himself in prison somehow. He did it because he felt that people in prison needed to hear the gospel. And so he went and he preached to them. And he obtained the permission of the warden. And that continued for several years until when Brother Jeff, who you saw earlier, who you see more of, was young. One of the guards got drunk, started firing his gun into the air, and pointed the barrel at the head of Brother Rolando in the middle of worship services. The prisoners scattered, and Brother Rolando said, "What are you doing? If you're going to shoot me, can you wait until we're finished?" And thereafter, they no longer had worship services in the prison. And I understand why. And for several weeks, they were very afraid that the guard who had got drunk and who had started firing his weapon in the air would retaliate just to keep people silent, because that sort of thing can happen from time to time. This is a picture. Didith is not in this picture because she took the picture. Here you have myself. I'm the large white man. This is Brother Rolando, Rolando Asurin. Rolando also lived in Bakersfield for a while, and he visited North Hills, where my mom was, while he was living there. His daughter, Jezreel, is a member in Bakersfield, where Brother Randy Hilburn preaches and is also one of the elders. You'll see some of Randy in this presentation as well. This is his wife, Ludivina, Ludi for short. And Brother Rolando and his son, Jeff, share the work there in Vigan, in Ilocos Sur. And they also share the work for a congregation in Bantay, which is the municipality directly north of Vigan. The Philippines is separated, the governmental structure, the geographical structure, separated into provinces. Each province is separated into municipalities. Each municipality is separated into what we call barangay, which is your sort of local neighborhood or village, right? So Vigan City is one municipality. Bantay to the north is where they also preach, and the barangay they preach in happens to be called Malingeb. There will not be a quiz, don't worry. But this is their granddaughter. That's my mother-in-law, and that's my sister-in-law, Didith's younger sister. So Saturday was spent taking us around town. This picture was taken on Sunday morning before we went to worship, and on Sunday morning, we were preaching in, I preached in Vigan. This is obviously that what that is. I don't think there's any mystery to me standing behind a pulpit anymore by this point. So that was Sunday morning, and they do have Bible class for the children. And so you can see Aria here on the left side. And they do have activities, and there's that too. What's that doing there? I don't know how that got there. Aria loves babies, as you guys all know. So that was Sunday morning, and we had sort of a lunch break on Sunday. And then Sunday afternoon, we went to Malingeb. My sister-in-law took this picture, Marianne. And so she didn't really pay attention to what was in focus. So we have a great view of the back of this sister's head here. Well, I'm a little bit out of focus. That might be an improvement. I don't know. But this is the work in Bantay, in Malingab. And there they also have Bible class for the children. And so this is what's going on. Now, Monday, we were forced to take a break because that's when Brother Randy flew to Lawag from Manila. Because he arrived before I did, and he was going all over the country, and he goes to some very, very dangerous places. We're very grateful we have a brother who has a commission in the Philippines Army and is a member of the intelligence branch, and he also runs a private security firm. So whenever we have to go to the dangerous areas, he sends a few of his torpedoes along with us. And they're some of the guys, and he always recruits from former military. He doesn't recruit from anywhere else for a security firm. And these gentlemen, a lot of them are brothers in Christ now, and they're always carrying on them at least 4 weapons. Some of them you see, some of them you don't. But they are armed to the teeth, and Roger usually sends about 4 or 5 of them along with whoever's going to Mindanao. So even if we go to dangerous places, we are kept safe. I didn't go to any this trip. So Monday, we were forced to take a little bit of a break. Tuesday was spent sort of as a lectureship for the preachers here in the area. Now, this is our old projector. We're working. Don't, please, not now, later. This is Brother Randy Hilburn. You can't really see him very well. Right here is Brother Tommy Denson. He's one of the elders in Mira Loma, down in sort of southeast Los Angeles area, going out toward Riverside. And he came along with Randy for the trip. And a lot of these brothers that you see here are preachers from the Ilocos Norte or the Ilocos Sur region. There are many more preachers here in the region than came for here. And that's a discussion for another time, if you want. And so during that day, I presented some thoughts about sort of covenant theology to the preachers there, providing them some background, some opportunity to get sort of a springboard to do more research on their own, to get them thinking along the lines of who we are within that framework. Some of a lot of the things that I've been talking about here over the last year or so. And so there's... Oh, what's that doing there? I'm sorry, I can't resist those ones. They're so cute. So this was taken on Wednesday. And on Wednesday, we had a gospel meeting for the church there in Vigan. And a lot of the brothers and sisters just took Wednesday off of work and just showed up on Wednesday morning and stayed there. And we had lunch sort of outside the church building. And then they stayed Wednesday afternoon. And then almost every single one of them was back for Bible class on Wednesday night. Taking Wednesday off of work to come to a gospel meeting. We don't really do that here. But they do it there. And that's when the picture I showed you at the beginning was taken. 2 ladies were baptized into Christ. This is Brother Jeff. This is a brother named Noel Peñalaver. Brother Noel, don't try and pronounce the last name. Brother Noel, we'll call him, has an interesting history. He's a preacher, and he preaches in a very rural part of the country, northern Cagayan, right up on the coast, where the brethren are very poor, everybody is very poor up there. And Brother Noel has an interesting history because he used to be the regional director of the NPA. And the Filipino brothers and sisters in their minds are in the audience are going, huh? Those of you who do not know, the NPA are communists in the Philippines. They are communist rebels in armed rebellion against the government. Brother Noel used to be the regional director of the NPA. He no longer has any ties with them. He is now a wonderful, faithful preacher of the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's the power of the gospel. And so that was taken sort of, that picture of the baptism was taken after our lunch break, before our afternoon session. And they came forward and they were asking to be immersed into Christ after the morning session was over, but we had to wait until the lunch break was over because we had to fill up the baptistry. because they don't have it. It's out in the back, and you don't want to keep standing water in the Philippines. It's a bad idea. Because in the Philippines, there are these things called mosquitoes. And they carry nasty diseases like malaria, dengue, and Zika. So, no standing water. So we had to fill up the baptistry, and then the work was done. And then this was taken sort of every place you go in the Philippines, everyone wants to have a group picture. Everyone wants the group picture. So this was our group picture on Wednesday, and this is most of the congregation there in Vigan. This lady right here, who you can't see very well, you'll see a little bit of her house. Her name is Diwata, which means fairy in Tagalog. That's her name is fairy. Her name is Diwata. You'll see some of Sister Diwata in her house later on. There I am, quite obviously. There's Brother Randy Hilburn from Bakersfield. And there's Sister Judy Hilburn, his wife. And there's Brother Tommy Denson from Mira Loma. What I want to show you now is another picture. This picture wasn't taken on this trip. This picture was actually taken 6 years ago. The next picture was taken 6 years ago in 2010. We did not get a picture of this sister on this trip, but this is a lady named Sister Chuna. Now, there's Jeff, looking much younger and much slimmer. This is Brother Daniel Chongson. I've talked about Brother Daniel before, even though I may not have mentioned him by name. Brother Daniel lives in Vigan, and he works as an electrician for ISECO, the local electric cooperative. And he's an electrical engineer for ISECO. And he works there Monday through Friday. And then Friday night after work, he drives north to Loag, the capital of Ilocos Norte, which takes about 3 hours. And then he turns east, and he drives another 3 hours to a place called Pamplona in northern Cagayan, which is way out in the boondocks, way out in the sticks. It's right on the coast. His brother Dante, who you'll also see, lives there. And Brother Daniel does preaching there in Pamplona every weekend. And every Saturday he holds Bible classes with members, with non-believers. And then every Sunday afternoon when worship is over, he drives 6 hours back home. And on Monday morning, he goes back to work. He has a 12-hour round trip. How many preachers in the U.S. want to commute 12 hours? I know I have complained about sometimes some of the men and some of the preachers I've met in the Philippines. Everything I've said is honest and just and fair, but at the same time, these are some of the best. This is the other side of the coin. You get men in the Philippines who lie, who cheat, who gossip. You get men who only preach in order to get a free paycheck, a support check from churches in the United States. And I talked a little bit about that this morning, some of the damage that we can do out of our desire to spread the gospel and do good things. Sometimes we end up giving men money who have no business getting it. And then there are guys like this. This is a picture of the building in Malingueb. So I told you Sunday afternoon I was in Malingueb. Thursday all day long, morning and afternoon, we were also in Malingueb, and we sort of had a gospel meeting there for the members there. And they were all there that day. I mean, nobody skipped out. Everybody showed up. And here we are. Here I am. And the brother on the left translating for me is Brother Alex Valoroso. That's his name. He's a great translator. He's a wonderful man. He's a great preacher of the gospel. And, oh yeah, there's that one too. So here's the congregation there at Malingueb. Here's Brother Jeff, not quite looking like he did 6 years ago. But that happens to a lot of us. Here's Brother Rolando. And this is the congregation there. And that day, these two gentlemen here at the bottom were immersed into Christ. This one is about 17. This one looks like he's about 8, but he's really 13. This is a view that Sister Diwata, who I was talking about earlier, owns one of the oldest houses in Vigan. She's extremely wealthy. She is. She's very well off. And she's one of the reasons why the church building in Vigan is as nice as it is. The land that the church building is built on was given to the congregation by her. She owned the land. The land that Brother Rolando's house is built on used to be, was hers. She sold it to Brother Rolando for almost pennies to the dollar. The sister that you saw, Sister Chuna, the older lady who is being baptized 6 years ago, I want to tell you a little bit about her story and how Sister Diwata involves. And this is a view from Sister Diwata, of Sister Diwata's garden in the Philippines. And they're connected because Sister Chuna, the one you saw being immersed, the older sister, her family are all Catholics. And she suffered a stroke just before she was immersed into Christ. For the last 6 years, she's been a very faithful member of the church in Vigan. And I'd gone to preach in Vigan on Sunday morning. When I went to Malingeb on Sunday afternoon, the Sunday before Randy got there, my second day in Vigan, Didith didn't come with me. Aria sort of was needing a nap. And when we were supposed to start worship, that was right about the time. And it wouldn't have been pretty with her there. But after Aria woke up, Didith went downtown with her mother and her sister-in-law. And when she was downtown, she saw Sister Chuna begging on the street. And so I asked Brother Rolando and Brother Jeff about her situation, what it was like. And I said, you know, does she have anywhere to live? I said, well, she stays with her family. But it's not peaceful, because the family are very serious Catholics. And our Filipino brothers and sisters know how seriously Catholic Filipinos can be. Just like Lalo, Latinos, very much the same way. Very, very Catholic. And so sometimes they'll kick her out. A lot of times they'll curse at her. They give her a roof when they're feeling like it, but they don't give her any food. And they always say it's because she left the Catholic faith. In 6 years, she's never turned back. And when Didith saw her begging in the street that afternoon, I spoke to Rolando and to Jeff, and I said, you know, I asked for her story. Tell me what you know. The church in Vigan gives her 200 pesos every week, which is really all they can afford to give her. And that's not enough. And some members of the congregation there in Vigan go to her and say, why are you begging? Aren't we giving you money? And she tells them it's not enough, because that's not enough. That's not enough for food for a week. That's not enough for the medicine that she needs. It certainly isn't at all by any stretch of the imagination. 200 pesos, by the way, is less than $5. Less than $5. That's what she has for the week. Sometimes she comes by Brother Rolando's house. And she says, I need something. And they give her what they can. Sometimes she goes by Sister Diwata's house. And she gives her quite a bit whenever she can. But she doesn't like to come by because she doesn't want to beg. Not from the congregation. She feels more comfortable begging from strangers. And it's really sad. Because in the book of Deuteronomy, God says to the nation of Israel, there shall be no poor among you. The first time we were at Sister Diwata's house, the sister who has given so much to the church there and who gives some to Sister Chuna. By the way, when we were there, we used 5,000 pesos of our benevolence fund to give to Sister Chuna. And Brother Randy from Bakersfield matched that out of what he had. So she got something while we were there. The first time I got the tour of Sister Diwata's house, she was taking me through the garden and she showed me this grotto. Just to give you guys an understanding of how well Sister Diwata truly understands the gospel. She showed me this and she said, this is where we kept the idols. And she moved on. And here I am, Western American, right? You know, sort of wonder-bred white boy, thinking, you know, what idols is she talking about? What, did she have like a little Krishna or something? And then like 20 minutes later, it took me 20 minutes to get this. 20 minutes later, I go, oh, this is where they had the little Santa Familia thing. Okay. But she didn't say this is where we used to have the Holy Family statues. She said this is where we used to keep the idols. And now, as you can see, it's empty. And that's what she called it, flat out, which shows you how well Brother Rolando is teaching the Christians there and how well she has studied the Bible for herself, that she recognizes what things are immediately, and she called it for what it is on day one, and she said, this is what it is. And so we went by her house, and we visited with her on Friday in the morning. Friday afternoon, we got in a van, and we drove north to Loag, which is sort of on the northwestern coast of Luzon, the northern island of the Philippines. And then we turned east, and we went to Pamplona. And this is a picture of the congregation in a place called Kaogingannan. There will be a quiz on that later. Kaogingannan means, in Ilocano, the place of the charcoal makers. Because they make charcoal here. They make charcoal. A lot of these brothers and sisters are what the Filipinos call negritos, which means little black people. They are the aboriginal inhabitants of the Philippines. Our Filipino brothers and sisters that we have in the audience are not actually the original Filipinos. Their ancestors migrated from Malaysia about 600 or 700 years ago, much the way many of our ancestors migrated over from Europe 300 or 400 or 500 years ago. The Negritos are the aboriginal Filipinos. And there has been quite a lot of mixing, which is why some of these brethren look so much like regular Filipinos, for lack of a better term. But you'll find a few here and there who really look the part. And as you'll see, they look like Australian or New Guinea Aborigines because that's the genetic haplogroup that they come from. So Saturday, we had a gospel meeting there in Kaogingannan. And this is one of the places where Brother Daniel goes on Sunday morning. He and his brother, his older brother Dante, and their father Danilo worked together. Danilo also lived in the LA area for a time, and for a time actually worshipped at Lassen Street with my mom. So this is me getting ready to preach, and I preached from Jonah that morning. And this is Brother Dante. This is Daniel's older brother. Although if you were to see the interaction between them, it would look like Daniel's the older one. But Dante's the older one, but he's very quiet, soft-spoken kind of guy. Daniel's a little bit more like me, not so quiet or soft-spoken at all. But these brothers are the ones I love to work with the most in the Philippines. Because it's always sort of, you know, how well does your translator understand English, right? And how quickly can he think on his feet to sort of, because translating on the fly is really hard. It's extremely difficult. Just ask Lalo, trying to translate something from English into Spanish. It's not easy stuff, even if you know both languages really well. And sometimes one word doesn't really have another equivalent in the other language. You kind of got to think, okay, this word. I'm going to go with that one. Brother Dante, Brother Daniel, and Brother Jeff, they are my three favorite brothers to work with by far in the Philippines as far as translation goes. They are splendid. They are superior interpreters. And they are very gifted speakers themselves, which is one of the reasons why they're so good at interpreting, because they have a familiarity with both English and Ilocano. They can think on their feet, and they're used to expressing themselves verbally, and all of that aids in this task. And they are very good at this job. So while we were there, a brother was visiting us, someone I've told you about before. This is Brother Quirino, and he looks the part. His blood is much more purely Negrito. Brother Quirino has been preaching way out in the mountains, way, way out in the mountains, for 48 years now. Brother Quirino has been preaching for 48 years. A lot of preachers in the Philippines will look for American support. Part of the damage that we've done in the Philippines by supporting so many preachers is that preachers, and not just in the Philippines, this is true in Latin America. Lalo has seen this. This is true in Africa. Derek has seen this. This is true in a lot of the world. But I know the Philippines best. That's why I'm using them as an example. This is true all over the world, right? We've supported so many preachers that sometimes preachers think that they deserve support from America just because they're preaching. They come to expect it. They have an addiction to American support. And we enable that. That's what I said when I said sometimes the problems with churches and brethren in other countries is not the problem with them, it's a problem with us. Because we support men who should not be getting support, and it's our fault. It is our fault for not doing due diligence. It is our fault for not doing research. It is our fault for not sending someone over there and getting to know them personally. It's our fault. We have created a lot of the problems that exist with the churches in the Philippines. We've done that here in America, and it's our fault that they exist. Brother Quirino, on the other hand, is sort of exactly the opposite. I admire him very much. He's been preaching for 48 years now, and he's never gotten a single dime of support from the U.S. Not for himself and not for preaching. He's a farmer. He's a rice farmer. That's what he does. He's a rice farmer who's also a preacher. And every morning he wakes up and he reads his Bible while it's still dark by the light of a kerosene lamp, because that's all he has. And he reads his Bible and he gets ready for Sunday. And he does that every morning, and then he goes out, white-haired as he is, to work in the fields. And he works in the rice fields. And he comes home, and he reads his Bible some more. And on Sunday, he preaches. And every week, he starts it all over again. And every time any American offers him money, he never takes it for himself. He always gives it away to the brothers and sisters where he preaches. And this trip, we actually gave him 6,000 pesos. He didn't ask for it. We gave it to him. And when we gave it to him, he said, "Thank you. My wife needs this very much because she's sick and she's been in the hospital." And we didn't know that. He didn't ask for money to help pay his wife's hospital bills. He didn't do that. We only found out about him after we gave him the money. But he said, "Thank you. My wife can really use this." He didn't say, "I can really use this." He said, "My wife can really use this." I admire him very much. Some of these men are some of the best men I've ever known. Here are two of the sisters there in Kaugingannan, and they also very much look more classically like Australian or New Guinea Aborigines, because they, like I said, they belong to the same ethnic group. So here is a picture of the congregation. This congregation, by the way, is one of the largest I've ever seen in the country. On Sunday morning, there are in between 200 and 250 people assembled together to worship Christ. In between 200 and 250. And this is way out in the middle of nowhere, in an extremely rural, extremely poor part of the Philippines. And as such, while we were there, we decided to teach Aria a lesson. We wanted her to learn how to give, because we've been blessed with so much. And this was an opportunity for her to learn how to share and how to appreciate what we have. She's not even three, but I'm going to show her these pictures when she gets older to make sure she remembers. Right now, what she values is candy. She's a toddler. So we had her take what she values
and we had her give that to people who can't afford it, people who don't have anything. As you can see, this boy on the left, well, as you may not be able to see, this boy on the left doesn't have any shoes. And he's standing and he's walking on rocks, and some of them are kind of sharp. He has no shoes because his family can't afford them. I'm grateful his tank top was as long as it was because it keeps it G-rated, because he's also not wearing any pants. The reason he's not wearing any pants is because his parents cannot afford diapers. These people are poor. This is a picture of food. This is Brother Danilo, by the way, Brother Danilo Chongsan, Daniel and Dante's father. This is a picture of food being given to the brethren in Kaugiganan. We didn't pay for this. We didn't do this. You guys didn't pay for that. My sister-in-law did. She took 10,000 pesos. And she gave food and medicine. Her birthday is coming up in July. She's going to be turning 30. And she said she wanted her birthday to mean something. And this is how she chose to celebrate it. This is the building of the church there in Kaugiganan, where we were on that Saturday, the second Saturday I was there in the Philippines. This building looks dilapidated. It looks run down. It looks haphazardly constructed, because it is. It looks like it's just barely there, because it is just barely there. This is the church building now. This was the church building 3 years ago. This was the church building from another angle, right about that same time. Our Filipino brothers and sisters in the audience will remember Typhoon Yolanda. It destroyed a lot of the central Philippines. Leyte, in particular, got wiped out. A congregation that I know, in which I have many friends in San Diego, lost a member there because he had gone, he was a Filipino, he had gone back home to Leyte to visit his family. And he was there when the typhoon hit. And they never heard from him again. We lost at least one brother in Christ that I know of. But this area of the Philippines was not hit by Typhoon Yolanda. It typically doesn't get hit by really big super typhoons, like the middle of the country does. Instead, northern Cagayan gets pelted with smaller typhoon after smaller typhoon after smaller typhoon every single year. And when you have, if I get up and I punch someone really hard, it's going to do some damage. I'm a lot of guy with a lot of weight behind me, right? But if you have a smaller guy and you have him throw a lot of punches, they may not be as strong as a man who's 250, 260 like myself, but if you have him punch someone enough in exactly the same spot over and over again, I guarantee you it'll do just as much damage in the long run. These brethren get hit by the small punches over and over and over and over again. And before they had that nice, and comparatively it is nice, concrete building, all they had was a concrete foundation. This was it. That was all they had. This is the concrete foundation. This is a picture that Daniel sent me after this happened, by the way. And on that concrete foundation, they had some bamboo posts and they had a thatched roof. And after it fell down, they continued to meet because nothing was going to stop their worship service. So they gathered together in that little collapsed, underneath that collapsed roof that was just barely still holding up because it was raining and they needed a place to worship God. And they worshiped. This is a picture of what a lot of their houses look like today. This is the back of the church building. It's the only building that has cinder blocks in the entire village. This is one of those interesting places where almost the entire village are members of the Lord's body. As you can see, there have a few houses with corrugated tin roofs, although there's still a lot of thatching. You have some wood paneling on the houses. This is another view, sort of a long-distance view of some other houses in the village. These ones all still have thatched roofs. There are no corrugated tin roofs here. You have wood paneling. The wood paneling on the side is new. Because when we went there the first time, they didn't have that yet. All they had were bamboo posts and thatched roofs, and that's how they lived. Folks complain about the recession here and how hard. And we've been hit. We have. We've lost a lot of things that we're used to having. But let's put some things in perspective. So that's where we were at Sunday morning, or Saturday morning. Saturday afternoon, we drove east to the eastern portion of Cagayan, the eastern portion of Luzon, and then we turned south, and we drove to Tuguegarao. And when we were in Tuguegarao, that Sunday morning, I actually went back north about an hour and a half to a little village called Palayag. And this is the church building in Palayag. Here's a view from the inside. This is my nephew, Charles. This is my mother-in-law. This is my oldest sister-in-law, Mila. Charles is Mila's son. He's she and her husband's first son. And I went there because I hadn't been there since my very first trip in 2008. But that also happens to be where my father-in-law preaches. And so there's a picture of Alejandro, my father-in-law, Didis dad. And I know I have a grumpy look on my face. I'm just waiting for him to finish talking so I can talk again. So I guess that naturally gives me a grumpy look. But we went there that Sunday morning. And this is a picture of the congregation there that Sunday. And Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday were mostly spent with me meeting with preachers in the area that are being supported by several congregations in California that I'm familiar with that have asked for me to drop in on these brothers and check out how they're doing and see what they're up to, see how they are, see how they're feeling, see if they need anything. This is a picture of two of the brothers that I met with, Brother Mar Bilhera and Brother Edgar Licodini. Brother Mar has a long and storied history with the Pentecostals because he used to be a Pentecostal pastor. And not only was he a Pentecostal pastor, he was the go-to guy for translation and organizing of the revivals of all the Pentecostal pastors from America who came to the Philippines. You name a big name, if you think of a big name Pentecostal pastor from the United States who's ever gone to the Philippines, there's a very good chance Brother Mar has worked with them. And he learned the gospel. Someone taught him. He rejected being a Pentecostal. He went back to his old Pentecostal congregation that he used to be the pastor of, right? And he got up and he said, "I've learned something new about the Bible and I want to share it with you today." And that was his first Sunday morning back at a Pentecostal church after being converted into the Lord's body. And he preached the gospel to them, his former congregation of Pentecostals. And about 90% of them became members of the Lord's family. Brother Mar has managed to work with, to teach, and to convert over 100 formerly now Pentecostal pastors. And has worked with them to teach the congregations that they used to preach for, that used to be Pentecostal churches that are now churches of Christ. And he's done a lot of really good work in the country. And he's another one of the men that I admire quite a lot. The brother on the right, Edgar, is Mar's secretary. That's the joke. Because Brother Mar doesn't have a computer, Brother Mar doesn't have an email address, Brother Mar does not like any technology more advanced than an old rotary phone. So you hand him something with a touchscreen and he goes, "What is this? Give me my ukulele." Brother Mar also has My one and only, he says, Lydia, his wife. And they're only 9 children. Only 9. So Brother Edgar is the one who writes all of Mars' emails for him and sends them out to the churches that are supporting him. So Brother Edgar is a very great assistance to Brother Mar. They go a lot of places together. They do a lot of preaching together. They hold a lot of gospel meetings together. They work very much hand in hand. Edgar is Luke to Mar's Paul. That's very much the relationship between the two of them. Brother Edgar, one of the other reasons I have a great deal of respect for Brother Edgar is that there are in the Philippines divisions among the church. There are fractures, and it ought not to be so. And a lot of these fractures are created by us, by our support, and by who we give it to, and by the attitude that we have when we send support. And there are certain American brethren sending support who say, don't associate with anybody who believes differently than I believe. And it's Americans who have that attitude that are responsible for the